Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 5 o'clock. Coming up next is your evening news.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Judge Torres, running January 10th to 19th at the Milagro Theater in Portland. Judge Torres is a modern-day fairy tale rooted in Salvadoran folklore. Xiomara Torres faces many obstacles in her turbulent journey crossing the border, maneuvering the U.S. foster care system, missing her family, aging out, and becoming the most recent Latinx judge in Multnomah County, Oregon. This is her story. Again, that's Judge Torres, running January 10th through 19th, weekly on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Hopworks Urban Brewery, offering sustainable brews and local food for 10 years. Serving the community at three locations, Hopworks Urban Brewery on Southeast Powell Boulevard, Bike Bar at North Williams Avenue, and in Vancouver on Southeast Mill Plain Boulevard. More information is available online at hopworksbeer.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, what's in the new farm bill?
And local activist Teresa Rayford takes a step forward in her lawsuit against the city.
And in international news, Israel and the U.S. leave UNESCO.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 4th, 2019. I'm Jenka Soderberg.
And I'm Ani Haynes. Oregon could take the next step toward joining Pinot Noir and craft beer on Oregon's list of famous exports under a proposal likely to go before state lawmakers in the new year. The Statesman Journal reports that the Craft Cannabis Alliance, a business association led by founder and executive director Adam Smith, is working with legislators to let Oregon start exporting pot to other legal weed states by 2021. Among them is Senator Floyd Prezinski, who is a Democrat in Eugene. Prezinski said he also plans to reintroduce provisions from Senate Bill 1042, a similar proposal that died in the State House in 2017. This comes as the state's legal cannabis industry has faced plummeting prices over the past year due to demand not keeping up with supply. Also at issue is whether bad actors are funneling marijuana into the lucrative black market. The proposals represent how advocates are trying to move cannabis onto the forbidden superhighway of interstate trade, which is fraught with regulatory roadblocks. Wholesalers could ship across state lines so long as Oregon's governor had made a pact with the receiving state to allow those deliveries. Still, opponents aren't convinced Oregon would find any takers.
As of January 1st, this past week, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife will now allow roadkill to be salvaged by Oregonians. This law means that any deer or elk struck by a vehicle can now be legally salvaged in Oregon using a free online permit. Part of the new law specifies that the online permit must be obtained within 24 hours of bringing the animal home.
Portland activist Teresa Rayford is suing the city for a wrongful arrest 3 years ago. Today, she had a hearing in the Multnomah County Courthouse. KBOO reporter Jenka Soderberg was there and filed this report.
So we're outside of the courthouse with Alyssa Pariah, one of the organizers and activists here in support of Teresa Rayford. Can you tell us a little bit about what Teresa is facing today?
Yeah, so she won her criminal case, took it to trial after they tried to give her a horrendous plea on trumped-up charges, and they always knew that they were trumped-up charges, in my opinion. And they were shocked and dismayed, I imagine, when she decided to take it to trial. And she won. Thank you very much. And now she has every right to sue for damages, and she's going to get them.
And do you feel like Teresa was targeted for being an activist?
I was there. She was absolutely targeted. There were more than 100 of us on that legendary intersection, Southeast 82nd and Division, on August 9th, 1 year after Mike Brown was killed by Ferguson officer Darren Wilson. His body laid in the street for 4.5 hours. That's how we got our name, Don't Shoot. The last words that he ever spoke were, "Hands up, don't shoot." And Darren Wilson blew him away in cold blood and laid his body to cook on the pavement in August in Missouri, where his mother was left screaming to grab her baby. And she was stopped by police under threat of violence and arrest. So a year later, we lifted him up and honored his mother, Leslie McSpadden. And it was on that day that when we went outside to demonstrate that Teresa was targeted, the police were not even looking at anyone else. They always intended to arrest Teresa because they thought that she was going to somehow disrupt Bernie Sanders' speech that night at the Motor Center, because some activists had done it the night before in Seattle. We never had a plan to do that. That was a horrendous thing for them to assume. It says everything about their character and what they think about us. Teresa was never going to do that, but they arrested her without ever finding out one way or the other.
Did they actually admit that that was the reason for arresting her?
Of course not. They said that it was because she was creating an annoyance, disturbance, and alarm. Those are the famous words that they kept on saying over and over again in order to scare the jury into thinking that this woman is a criminal. And in just a few minutes, they came right back after deliberating, and it was a not guilty. Thank you very much.
Was that a jury that she had?
It was a jury. It was a jury of her peers. That's right.
And
it was unanimous and quick.
And so now what is she suing for?
Money damages.
For the pain and suffering trauma that they caused.
That's right. And continued pain and suffering and trauma. They're not stopping, in case you haven't known.
What do you expect to happen today?
I expect Teresa will be allowed to proceed with her case.
Well, and what should people know about what Don't Shoot PDX is doing and how to support Teresa?
Don't Shoot Portland is going to be having our 5th annual Reclaim King march and rally led by children this year. And this is where we come together every year to assert King's radical legacy. Centrists have, for decades now, tried to tame King's legacy and turn him into just a peace lover and a nonviolent activist. He was so much more than that. He believed in upending the legacy of white supremacy, settler colonization, and capitalism in this country. And the fact that they continuously try to tame that legacy is insulting. So this is our small part every year to counter that. Reclaim King.
And where can people find out more information?
That will be at Peninsula Park at 1 p.m. on January 20th. Please, everyone, come at the north end of Peninsula Park on Rosa Parks.
And, of course, probably by tuning in to your show on KBOO, The Struggle.
No doubt. My show on KBOO is every Friday, 7 o'clock p.m., and I interview local activists who are doing good work in the community to give them a platform to talk about their work, to hopefully get people like you lovely listeners right now to support their work. Teresa was actually my first guest. It was only right. I've been following her for years.
Thank you so much, Alyssa, for joining us. This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO Radio.
There is no word yet as to the outcome of the hearing.
We do have an outcome of the hearing. And
the judge ruled that the case can move forward and dismissed the claim by the city that that it should halt. So activists who were present cheered the result, and Teresa will move forward with her lawsuit to sue the city.
And that was, in fact, Jenka Soderberg, who was speaking with Alyssa Pariah just moments ago at the courthouse. And now, Jenka, back to you for some more news.
This from the Common Dreams News Agency. In the second video featuring Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to make headlines in less than 24 hours, the first-term congresswoman called for major systemic changes to address the climate crisis. She suggested taxing ultra-wealthy Americans around 70% to help pay for it, declaring, quote, "If that's what radical means, call me a radical." This is not an unprecedented move. Under President Franklin Roosevelt, the wealthiest Americans had paid up to 90% of their income in taxes. The video quickly caught the attention of both advocates and critics of implementing a progressive taxation scheme. She said this plan would force the rich to start paying their fair share in taxes. According to CBS News, in the interview, Ocasio-Cortez says that hiking taxes on the very rich could help pay for the Green New Deal. This is an increasingly popular proposal among the American public and Democrats in Congress that would pair efforts to curb global warming with policies to create a more just economy. A foundational goal of the Green New Deal, championed by Ocasio-Cortez, is fully eliminating fossil fuels and carbon emissions within the next 12 years, in line with recent recommendations from international climate scientists.
As the 116th Congress begins to tackle its agenda this term, voting rights is a key issue. Among the items included in the newly introduced House Resolutions No. 1 bill for the People Act is better access to early voting, easier access to online voter registration, and the recognition of the need to restore the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Among the groups supporting the bill is Asian Americans Advancing Justice, an affiliation of five civil rights organizations. The group said that they have worked for decades to preserve the voting rights for every eligible American while fighting against voter suppression tactics that impede Asian Americans' access to the ballot box. This bill, they say, is a great starting point towards measures that will improve voting opportunities for millions of eligible Americans in communities of color, also people with disabilities, and those who have limited English proficiency, which includes one-third of the Asian American community. They point to the need to restore the Voting Rights Act and implementing a congressional fix to the Shelby v. Holder decision that decimated the voting rights protections within the act.
And you're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Tune in at 5:30 when KBOO journalist Tammy Habteas does an in-depth interview regarding the humanitarian crisis in Yemen. At 6, it's Bread and Roses with Rachel Hartley. Then at 7, The Struggle with Alyssa Pariah, today featuring local students who are fighting the plan to put police in Portland public schools. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with a low of 39, winds up east up to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow's weather will be early showers for the afternoon with a high of 47 degrees and a low of 39. Today in history, on January 4th, 1948, the British colony of Burma, now Myanmar, became an independent nation after more than 60 years of colonial rule. The quote of the day is from Assata Shakur. She said, "I have declared war on the rich who prosper on our poverty, the politicians who lie to us with smiling faces, and all the mindless, heartless robots who protect them and their property."
Current Cast is a daily 60-second module that discusses water sustainability and stewardship. Topics covered include pollution, conservation, climate change, recreation, and more.
Restoring Great Lakes wetlands on this Current Cast. Lakeshore marshes and meadows create wildlife habitat and provide benefits to people too.
filtering your water, absorbing high water during flooding events, providing more fish and wildlife experiences for people.
Jim Howe directs the Nature Conservancy of Central and Western New York. He says maintaining these ecosystems requires occasional fluctuations in water level. High water keeps woody plants from encroaching on meadow, and low water allows seeds in the lake bed to germinate. For decades, water levels on Lake Ontario have been tightly controlled. But now a new plan will allow lake water to rise and fall more naturally, replenishing 64,000 acres of wetland. Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell University's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Charisse Davids and Deb Holland were sworn in to the United States Congress Thursday, making history as the first two Native American women. They hugged on the House floor after the official ceremony. In a speech at an honoring event for them, Davids told the crowd they're bringing Native women voices to Washington. Indian Country Today captured the moment.
I'm really looking forward to making sure that people remember the history of our country and also the present, that people keep in mind that we're still here and that our voice is really important and that we need to have Native issues, concerns, and all the good stuff that's happening in Indian Country to be acknowledged and heard and seen in Congress and on the executive side. And we're here to make sure that that happens.
Deb Holland.
We've been parts of committees and councils and you know, teams and all of these things, thinking of all these wonderful ideas about how we can make Indian Country better. And what we really need are people in office so that we can take all those wonderful ideas and make the decisions that need to be made so that we can move forward, so that we can make our communities better places.
People from across Indian Country traveled to Washington this week. Wainima Chavez Quintana from Kiwa Pueblo in New Mexico went to support Holland. She attended the honoring ceremony and watched the swearing in with Holland's family.
Being there was just like just really overwhelming, and there was so much love and respect, and it was empowering as a woman, as a Pueblo woman, the strength that one woman could hold for all of us. You know, she has a heavy load to carry for us. I mean, Native America has a lot of topics that need to be addressed, and we need a lot of help. And now that we have a voice there, it's like, yes, Deb, let's give this power to you, and I believe in you, and let's have you be there for all of us, to represent all of us, all of our nations, and that's so important.
Healthcare, renewable energy, and protecting the environment are among issues Chavez Quintana hopes the new Congress will address for Native people. South Dakota's Department of Education is seeking applications for 21st Century Community Learning Centers. Grants are meant to help school districts or community agencies that work with local schools to complement regular school instruction. As South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports, tribal schools and agencies are encouraged to apply.
The grants come from the federal government to help provide academic enrichment to students, with particular attention paid to creative programs that keep kids engaged. Alan Harstad with the Department of Education says the federal grants will go to help students in high poverty or low performing schools.
They could be before school activities, after school activities, or summer programming, or some combination thereof. Some of our programs don't have a summer component. Some of them do. It just kind of depends. Almost a typical after school program, which they all have some after school component, would be some sort of a snack or a meal for the students. And then academic enrichment is the first priority. And so things like homework help, mentoring, working with their regular classroom teachers or another qualified individual.
Grants run 5 years and range from $50,000 to $250,000. Leaders with interested organizations need to submit a notice of intent to apply for the grants by January 18th. Once that's submitted, the deadline to file an application is March 1st. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbold.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
And what's in the Farm Bill? facing backlash about plastic, beverage companies are trying to develop new bottles. There's also a critter that thrives in areas of moderate temperature, humidity, and precipitation is invading the U.S. All this, and so much more coming up on The Week in Water right about now.
Dr. Seuss stops a gas pipeline. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
The Paris Agreement on climate change was kept alive at the UN conference called COP24, which concluded Saturday in Poland.
Delegates from 200 countries produced a 156-page rulebook about how nations will report their progress to limit carbon emissions.
There was concern that the U.S. would weaken the agreement. However, the New York Times reports U.S. negotiators worked constructively behind the scenes with other countries, including China, on transparency rules.
Highly visible were the many young people in attendance. 15-year-old Greta Thunberg from Sweden admonished delegates, saying the planet was being exploited by the wealthy few.
Our biosphere is being sacrificed so that rich people in countries like mine can live in luxury. It is the sufferings of the many which pay for the luxuries of the few.
Investors agree that urgent action is needed. According to The Guardian, some of the world's biggest pension funds, insurers, and asset managers issued a stark warning that without cuts in carbon emissions and the phase out of coal, the world faces a financial crash several times worse than that in 2008.
The Congress passed a massive farm bill last week with many environmental provisions, including increased funding for a program that prioritizes projects to protect drinking water and reduce harmful toxic algae blooms.
As Mother Jones reports, the bill also incentivizes farmers to use environmentally friendly soil management practices like reduced tillage, planting cover crops, and crop rotations in a way that sequester carbon.
Farmers will be able to get insurance when planting cover crops, which had in the past been problematic.
Another part of the bill allows farmers to grow hemp, taking it off the controlled substances list where it had been alongside drugs like heroin.
Early drafts of the bill included a rider that would have stopped local governments from regulating or restricting the use of pesticides in places like parks, playgrounds, and schools, but that provision was removed from the final legislation.
The organization Food and Water Watch applauded the bill, which makes important progress in organic food programs, including funding for research.
The bill is expected to be signed into law this coming week.
A growing consumer backlash against disposable plastics is driving a change in how water is bottled.
Department stores, zoos, and public facilities in the U.S. and Europe have stopped selling plastic water bottles, and a proposed bill in New York would ban the sale of them at parks, golf courses, and beaches.
Beverage companies are responding by attempting to develop a bottle made completely from recycled plastic, which has been a problem in the past due to discoloration and structural issues. Danone, the company that produces Evian, is betting on a new technology that can hopefully turn old plastics into new containers.
While Evian currently makes only 30% of its bottles from recycled plastic, it has pledged to make all of them from the materials by 2025.
One industry watcher told the Wall Street Journal that the importance of the matter has sunk in because of the broadened awareness of the environment, especially with millennials.
There's been an invasion of the U.S. by a new species of tick from Asia, and it has officials at the Centers for Disease Control worried about the spread of viruses and other pathogens.
The Asian longhorn tick is the first new variety of the arachnid to be found in the country in 80 years. As reported in Entomology Today, it's quickly moving across the eastern U.S. from Connecticut to Arkansas.
The critter thrives in areas of moderate temperature, humidity, and precipitation, which could include a large swath of the eastern U.S. as well as the coastal Pacific Northwest.
The newly detected species is very adaptable and can transmit disease, although to date it's not affected humans. The ticks can attack a cow or other livestock by the thousands and weaken them by depleting their blood supply. The female ticks reproduce without being fertilized, in effect producing clones.
Infections to humans from ticks in general are a big problem. The CDC reported in May that nearly 60,000 tick-borne infections were reported last year, but due to underreporting, they estimate the total number of actual cases may be as high as 300,000.
And finally, it's not often that you hear Dr. Seuss being quoted in federal court, but that's what happened last week when judges reprimanded the U.S. Forest Service for permitting a natural gas pipeline across two national forests and the Appalachian Trail.
Repeating the words of the small, fluffy Lorax who tried to save his beloved Trifula trees from a greedy industrialist, a three-judge appellate panel slammed the agency, saying, "We trust the United States Forest Service to speak for the trees. For the trees have no tongues."
The Washington Post reports that the judges concluded that the Forest Service had raised proper environmental questions early in its permit process, but those issues were suddenly and mysteriously assuaged in time to meet a private company's deadlines.
The court said that the agency's decisions violated both the National Forest Management Act and the National Environmental Policy Act, and found the Forest Service lacked the authority to grant the pipeline a right-of-way across the Appalachian Trail.
The underground natural gas pipeline is being built by Virginia-based Dominion Energy and would stretch over 600 miles across West Virginia, Virginia, and North Carolina. A spokesperson for Dominion and its partners said they will immediately appeal the decision, saying it will severely harm consumers and do great damage to our economy and energy security.
Lawyers for the Southern Environmental Law Center, who brought the case, hailed it as a major victory. And if the Lorax could rise up from the pages, he might applaud it as well. Even though he wasn't able to save his fictional Trifula trees, he helped the judges save a real forest instead.
This Week in Water is sponsored by the American Water Works Association. Explore new trends and technology at ACE 19, June 9th through 12th in Denver. Learn more at awwaace.org.
And in international news, both the United States and Israel have decided to officially quit the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, known by the acronym UNESCO. This comes as a new blow to the organization, since UNESCO was co-founded by the U.S. to promote peace after World War II. The U.S. administration has demanded a, quote, fundamental reform, while Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu claims that the U.N. agency is biased against Israel. He's refused to pay Israel's dues to UNESCO since September 2011, when Palestine was voted in as a member state. The withdrawals will not greatly affect UNESCO financially, since both countries have not paid their dues in years. The current U.S. debt has reached upwards of $617 million, and Israel's debt to UNESCO stands at over $8.5 million.
And also in international news this week in Palestine, Israeli forces continued to use excessive force against peaceful protesters in the Gaza Strip. A disabled Palestinian was killed in eastern Khan Yunis, while 25 civilians, including five children, a woman, a journalist, and two paramedics, were wounded. In the Gaza Strip, Israeli forces continued to use lethal force against the participants in peaceful protests organized each week along the Gaza Strip borders. These protests have now been going on for 41 straight weeks. More than 200 Palestinians have been killed and over 20,000 wounded by live fire and other weapons fired by the Israeli military into the largely peaceful crowds. No Israelis have been killed or wounded by Palestinians participating in the 41 weeks of Great Return March protests.
And you're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 4th, 2019. Here are the main points again. The new farm bill and what it entails, local activist Teresa Rayford suing the city for wrongful arrest, and in international news, Israel and the U.S. leave UNESCO. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Tammy Habteas and Jenka Soderberg. The producer is Rachel Hartley, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. The director of Evening News and Public Affairs is Rachel Hartley. A podcast and transcript of the newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You can also find it on the KBOO app. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm
Thanks, Jenka, and I'm Ani. Coming up on Monday morning on KBOO, 7 o'clock, you can hear Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 o'clock, more talk radio with Cecil and Celeste. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour digs into police militarization, Central American immigration, and the swearing-in of Portland's newest city council member, Joanne Hursty. At 10 o'clock on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein talks to the Sightline Institute about the fight to stop fossil fuel infrastructure from gaining a foothold in the Pacific Northwest. At 11, Making Contact looks at wealth inequality and prospects of creating a universal basic income. At 11:30, Madness Radio explores voices and visions from outside mental health. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, just go to kboo.fm and click donate. Take care. Have a good weekend.
And now it's time for your KBOO Evening News in depth. Tonight we will join Tammy Habteas.
Good evening. My name is Tammy Habteas, and tonight I'll be discussing the Yemen humanitarian crisis with my guest, Mohammed Aljuri. Mohammed is originally from Yemen, but has been living in Portland for the last 5 years. Tonight, Mohammed will share with us some of the difficulties and hardships that him and his families have had to endure because of this conflict. Here are his words.
My name is Mohammed Aljuri. I am a resident of the Portland area. I moved to Portland 5 years ago from